Will the House come to order? Will the members indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
20 members present.
Okay, the quorum call is still open. We do have a quorum. Our chaplain today is Reverend John Campbell. Will the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. O God, our world is in turmoil again. In some ways, the conflict seems far away from us, distant from our concerns, and yet we know the problems it represents are as deeply felt in our homes and communities as anywhere. In these final days of work together, may we be encouraged to boldness and creativity. We know that we cannot do it all, at least not this year, but there is still time for us to make a difference. Give us patience, O God, with one another and with a process that sometimes seems cumbersome. Enable us to set aside some of our differences and find our common goals so that our work will be productive and meaningful. Help us to compromise some of our self-interest for the interests of the common good. And finally, remind us that all that we do is not done alone or in isolation, but what we accomplish is the result of our cooperation with each other and our willingness to allow you into our lives. May we be open to your presence. Amen.
Representative Hudson, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask unanimous consent that Representative Hanley be excused from the call of the House for illness.
Representative Hanley is still ill and thus is excused from the call of the House. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread across the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the House Journal for the 113th legislative day?
I certify to the correctness of the House Journal for the 113th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal for the 113th legislative day is certified be approved.
Are there any objection as to the correctness of that journal? Hearing no objections, the journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This morning I'm pleased to introduce this body, a person who's been very active in his community and his corporation, Mr. Speaker. Please help me welcome Wilson Justin from the Outnuts Corporation, who is president and chief executive officer, and Imperatrovich Gallery.
Representative Foster, were you seeking the floor?
Yes, sir. I've got in Gallery Warren Taylor Gallery, some fellow Nomeites, good friends, John Hanlon, the mayor of Nome, if you'll please stand, and also Lincoln Trigg, one of the real respected leaders of the Native Corporations in the Bering Straits region, and also three members of the Nome Joint Utilities Board, Gary Eddy, Paul Mercuris, and Gary Butcher, if you'll help me welcome them as you know.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I believe I have a constituent, Pam Weaver, and her daughter, and she should be in Gallery. I think.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to add to Representative Foster's introduction of one of the guests in the Taylor Gallery. There's an individual there that I went to school with, grade school, high school, and then we sort of separated and didn't sort of lost track of each other until Representative Ivan offered me the opportunity to go up through and look at some of the National Guard facilities on western and northwest Alaska. And lo and behold, in Nome, Alaska, was my good friend Gary Butcher. And I'm glad to see him down here.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a, I'd like to introduce a person also in the Warren Taylor Gallery who has worked on the Transportation Committee for Representative Foster for the last year. Her name is Tracy Chamberlain, and I would like to also comment that she's returning to Australia shortly after the termination of the session, where she will head up the in Canberra, which is like their, like Washington, D.C. is to us. She will head up the and be the anchor woman on the international news to be reported out of Canberra. It's a top job. I mean, it's kind of a bigger than Connie Chung, so to speak, in the United States. We're all very proud of her and wish her the very best. And I'm sorry to see her leaving. It's been really nice to have her here. My wife Kay and I had the opportunity to visit with Wendy, which is her sister, and Tracy. And their family, their folks in the lovely little town of Wagga Wagga, which is quite a way. It's not quite in the whoop whoop, but you can see it from there in Australia a couple years ago. And it's been really fun to have her here. And I just wanted to say on behalf of the legislature, thank you, and give her one last applause. Thank you.
And I understand that it's just the start of the winter season in Australia. Yeah. Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed and returned Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 70, Finance, urging the United States Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code to increase the personal exemption for children under 18 and to provide for parental child care exemption. And House Bill number 266 amended, an act including service in a Bureau of Indian Affairs contract school as BIA service in the teacher's retirement system. The Senate has passed the following and transmitted it for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 324 Finance by the Senate Finance Committee, and act relating to reports on earnings of gross revenue of the Alaska Marine Highway System deposited into the Alaska Marine Highway System Fund and on the earnings of the Alaska Marine Highway System Vessel Replacement Fund.
Transportation, as well as the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate.
Do we have any other communications to come before this body?
The final report is on file in the Speaker's office in the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct, 1991 Annual Report. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee has considered House Senate Resolution 2, limit legislative service to 12 years. Recommends it be replaced with a CS Judiciary with a new title and due pass. That is a fiscal note and 2-0 fiscal note. Signing due pass, Donnelly, Martin, Parnell, and Ellis, with do not pass, Gruenberg. Report was signed by Chairman Donnelly. HJR 2 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 66, revocation of a minor's driver's license, recommends it be replaced with a CS Judiciary with the same title and due pass, and attaches an indeterminate fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Navarro, Boyer, Brown, Copeland, Jacko, Sharp, Phillips, Larson, Ulmer, and McLean, with no recommendation, Barnes. Report was signed by co-chairs Navarro and McLean. House Bill 66 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 167, absentee voting. Recommends it be replaced with a CS Finance with a new title and due pass. Signing due pass, McLean, Navarro, Boyer, Brown, Copeland, Barnes, Sharp, Phillips, Larson, and Ulmer. Report was signed by co-chairs Navarro and McLean. House Bill 167 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 341, compensate innocent vehicle owners. Recommends it be replaced with a CS Finance with a new title and due pass, and attaches a fiscal note. Signing due pass, Navarro, Boyer, Copeland, Jacko, Barnes, Sharp, Ulmer, Larson, and McLean, with no recommendation, Brown and Phillips. The report was signed by co-chairs Navarro and McLean. House Bill 341 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 355, In-Stream Flow Reservations for Fish and Game, recommends it be replaced with a CS Finance with a new title, has individual recommendations, and attached a zero fiscal note. Funding do pass Navarre, Copenhagen, Elmer, and Brown. Funding do not pass Barnes, Sharp, and Phillips. With no recommendation, McLean, Boyer, Jacko, and Larson. The report was signed by co-chairs Navarre and McLean. House Bill 355 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 422, Revocation of Driver's License, recommends it replace with a CS Judiciary with a new title, had no recommendations, and adopts the House Transportation Committee Letter of Intent. Planning do pass Martin. With no recommendation, Donnelly, Ellis, Parnell, Miller, and Gruenberg. The report was signed by Chairman Donnelly. House Bill 422 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 444, Revoked Driver's License is Using False ID, recommends it be replaced with a CS Judiciary with a new title and due pass and taxed a zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, McLean, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Copenhagen, Barnes, Sharp, Phillips, Larson, and Elmer. Report was signed by co-chairs Navarre and McLean. House Bill 444 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 462, Mandate Sale of Alaska Railroad, had no recommendations and attached an indeterminate fiscal note. Signing due pass, Lehman, with no recommendation, Phillips, Foster, and Hudson. Report was signed by Chairman Foster. House Bill 462 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill 465, Recycling Solid Waste Management Plan, recommends it be replaced with a CS Finance with a new title and due pass and attached a zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Copenhagen, Larson, and Elmer, with no recommendation, McLean, Barnes, Sharp, and Phillips. The report was signed by co-chairs Navarre and McLean. House Bill 465 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 492, Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, a loan eligibility, recommends it be replaced with a CS LNC with the same title and due pass. Signing due pass, McLean, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Copeland, and Larson, with no recommendation, Barnes, Sharp, Phillips, and Elmer. Report was signed by co-chairs Navarre and McLean. House Bill 492 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 575, Increased Motor Fuel Tax. Recommended be replaced with a CS Finance with a new title and due pass and attached a fiscal note. Signing due pass, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Copeland, and Larson. Signing do not pass, Barnes. Signing to amend, McLean, and with no recommendation, Sharp and Phillips. The report was signed by co-chairs Navarre and McLean. House Bill 575 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 44, ITC, Support Kentishna Area Tourism Development, recommends it be replaced with a House Committee Substitute, ITC, with the same title and due pass. Signing due pass, Foster, Hudson, Phillips, and Lehman. Report was signed by Chairman Foster. SJR 44 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Your introduction of citations and resolutions?
Citation honoring Senator Arliss Drzewski for distinguished public service by Representative Baker.
The Rules Committee.
I have no resolutions for introduction.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House Bill.
House Bill Number 591 by the House State Affairs Committee, an act relating to police protection service areas in municipalities.
This will go to Community and Regional Affairs as well as State Affairs.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us now down into the daily calendar. Madam Clerk, would you read the first item on that calendar? Mr. Majority Leader, the House standing. Before the at ease, we're about to enter into the daily calendar. Madam Clerk, would you read the first item on that calendar?
House Bill Number 2 by Representatives Ellis and Brown, an act increasing the excise tax on cigarettes. The HEF Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a CS HEF with a new title. Signing due pass, B. Davis, and Carney, with no recommendation, Gonzalez, and M.A. Miller. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a CS HEF. Signing due pass, McLean, Navarre, Boyer, Copenhagen, and Elmer. Signing do not pass, Barnes, Sharp, and Phillips, with no recommendation, Jacko and Larson. We have a committee substitute.
Having a committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader. Are there any objection as to the adoption of HESS? Hearing none, that committee substitute Hess has been adopted. Do we have any amendments pending?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments pending, Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will object to advancement of this legislation from second to third when that motion occurs, but prior to that, let me call the House on this and all the remaining portions of this calendar.
Okay, the House has been called upon the calendar. Mr. Majority Leader. There are no amendments. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move that the bill be advanced from second to third reading.
Okay. Representative Taylor.
Yes, I'm going to object to that, Mr. Speaker, primarily because this is a House measure. Though there are not amendments pending, it is a significant increase of about 40% in an existing tax, and I think that it at least deserves consideration by the body for one more day, and for that reason, I would object to advancement at this time.
Representative Taylor, the call has not been satisfied here. Now stand at ease. Before the at ease, we have a motion to advance. There are objections. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 2 Hess be advanced to third reading? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
23 yeas, 15 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 2 Hess will appear in third reading on the next calendar. Representative Navarre.
Speaker, could we have brief at ease?
The House stand at ease. Before the at ease, we were in the daily calendar, and the first item on that calendar will appear before us in third reading on the next calendar. Madam Clerk, would you read the next item?
House Bill number 191 by Representatives Ellis and Ulmer, an act relating to early intervention services for certain young children and their families and providing for an effective date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered the bill and recommends do pass. Planning do pass, Foster, B. Davis, Mackey, and C. Davis, with no recommendation, Baker and Gonzalez. The Hess Committee considers the bill and recommends it be replaced with a C.S. Hess with the same title and do pass. Planning do pass, B. Davis, Gonzalez, Carney, and Lincoln, with no recommendation, Hanley. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a CS Finance with the same title. Planning due pass, McLean, Navarre, Boyer, Brown, Kopanen, and Ulmer, with no recommendation, Sharp, Phillips, Larson, and Barnes. We have a committee substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move to ask the unanimous
consent. Get off the Finance CS.
Are there any objections? Any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Finance? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any pending amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader, we do have a call on us. Representative Runberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the bill be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and I'm going to blow my nose or something with this.
Are there objections to the advancement of... are there any objections to the advancement? There are objections. The call has not been satisfied. With the House stand at ease.
For House Bill 327.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the committee substitute judiciary has been adopted. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to Amendment Number 1?
Amendment Number 1 by Representatives Gruenberg, Miller, Kopanen, and Hudson.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Hearing objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The members have been given two amendments here that are very similar, and I will explain the amendment number one and very briefly explain the difference between the two. We have before us, if the members would look at the bill itself, the first section is an intent section that is the legislative intent to continue the open primary to the maximum extent legally and constitutionally permissible. The guts of the bill are in section three, where the lieutenant governor is given the authority to promulgate regulations implementing the party rules. It's a very simple concept. The result will be that the election is closed unless the Republican Party currently changes its party rules. And if the members would look at the handout we have provided under the present bill, if you look at the final thing, you'll see how the ballots will look. That there'll be one primary ballot in the Republican primary for Republicans and independents who don't choose to vote in the other primary, and there'll be a separate primary ballot for Democrats, AIPs, and Greens, and also for Republicans and independents who choose not to vote in the Republican primary. If you look at the second sheet, the one with the big question mark on it, you'll see the two questions: where can you run, where can you vote? And under the current judiciary CS, a Republican or independent voter can vote in either party primary, but only in one. And where can the Democrats, Greens, and independents, independent parties and other affiliated people vote is only in the other party primary. Under the current rules, candidates, if you're a Republican candidate, you can run in the Republican primary only. If you're a member of one of the other parties or an independent, you can only run in the other primary. The alternative that we have proposed in this amendment, Mr. Speaker, is the only alternative that will keep the open ballot and is constitutional under the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the case of Taschen versus the Republican Party of Connecticut. That case basically holds that in a party primary, a primary where the parties, not Democrats or Republicans, where any party controls it, the party rules control the operation of that primary. That is a federal constitutional right, and no state, by amending its constitution or laws, and even the federal government couldn't pass a law that changed that result. As long as you have a partisan primary, as we do, and as the Republican Party rules provide, we must allow them to limit the access to the voting booth and limit the access to the ballot. So they can control who is on the ballot, they can control who gets to vote on that particular ballot. There is only one way of opening up the ballot and still keeping constitutional under the Taschen decision. And that is what we have in this amendment before you, in these two amendments. And that is to provide that the top two vote getters, regardless of party, will go on to the November election. And if we have an open ballot like this, where it doesn't depend upon who put party you're on, then Taschen just does not apply. And this is constitutional under the Taschen. It keeps the current open ballot system. And the way it works, Mr. Speaker, is as follows. Very similar to the way it works today. The filing deadline will remain the same. There's no change there. And everybody signs up by files by the 1st of June. There is no petition process. And so there's nobody, like in the Jim Sykes case, coming on later and showing up in the general election only. All candidates are in the August election. There is one ballot. All candidates are on that ballot. Everyone gets to vote for any candidate they want on that ballot. And everyone's vote counts. The top two vote getters, regardless of party, go on to the general election, the runoff election in November. And there is one difference between Amendment 1 and Amendment 2, and this is it. In Amendment Number 1, if a candidate receives more than 50% in the August election, that candidate is elected. And that will shorten elections in a number of cases, lower the cost of the election, speed the process, and simplify it. In Amendment Number 2, regardless of the vote count in the August election, the top two will go on. And what that will do is ensure that there are two candidates, and only two, in the November election in all cases. And will give the voters a final say if they wish, even if somebody gets 99% of the vote as their first candidate and the second only gets 1%. There'll always be two in November. That's the only difference, the 50% provision. And if you look at the little handout we've given, you'll see that Amendment Number 1 is described on the first page. Amendment Number 2 is described on the second page. They are identical except for paragraph 3 there. This is, Mr. Speaker, I believe, the single most important constitutional issue we have faced in the last 8 years since I've been here, with the exception of the local hire issue, which we faced in the 14th legislature. And it is the single most important civil rights issue in this state that I've seen here in a long time. The people's right to vote in this state is fundamental. We have a history that dates back to territorial days, where there is an open ballot in this state, and people have been able to vote for whomever they choose. That is, with the exception of a few years at the beginning of statehood, that has been the strong tradition in this state. The statistics, Mr. Speaker, show that in the August 1990 primary, and this was a poll that was taken in both downtown district in Anchorage, which is fairly liberal, and the Sand Lake district in Anchorage, District 12 and District 9, which is more conservative, between 95 and 96% of the people split their vote, did not vote a straight party ticket. Only approximately 1 in 20 voted a straight party ticket. And this will enable people to vote their choice. In the polls that have been done, the legislative surveys that have been done this year, the ones I have seen conducted by various members of this body and the Senate, the figures seem to be that anywhere from 2/3 to 85% of the people who have responded say they support the open primary. Again, to look at the handout, Mr. Speaker, to look at the one with the question mark on it, the amendment that we are offering is the only one that has one ballot for all candidates and voters, and it's the only one that everybody can run and get a chance to be voted upon, and the only one where everyone gets a chance to vote for all the candidates. And if you look at the final sheet, Mr. Speaker, you'll see it's the only one that keeps the current situation with one ballot. Now, there is one other provision that I neglected to mention. There is a provision in the bill, in both versions, common to both, that if a party receives an endorsement, if a candidate receives an endorsement from a party, that endorsement may appear after the candidate's name. And you can see how it would look on the various ballots here. So that there will be a way, if a party, by its own rules, chooses to endorse a candidate, or more than one candidate for that matter, that will appear right on the ballot. That is modeled after Minnesota. And that is another method of indicating whether a candidate is endorsed, and that endorsement could come through a convention or a party primary or whatever. A letter is being distributed, or I guess it has been distributed, from Representative Miller and myself, a letter from Senator Stevens, and this has been referred to as the Louisiana model. It is similar to what they do there, but that is simply the state that has adopted this particular thing Washington has something similar, but not quite like this, because the parties there did not close their primary. The Washington model was what Alaska used to be. And frankly, I would hope that Republican Party would go back to their previous open primary with everybody else. But if not, I think that it is up to this legislature today to reaffirm the right of Alaskans to vote for the candidates of their choice. Thank you.
Okay, amendment number one is before us. There was a little bit of latitude in reference to amendment number two, and I guess the reason for that is the complexness of this particular issue and probably the interest in this particular issue. But try to confine your remarks to amendment number one, Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll save any further remarks I might have for later. I just had a couple questions on this proposal. The first was, in fact, did not the Democrat Party last night once again change its rules, and should we not be debating this in light of existing rules as passed by the two parties, not conjecture as to what some party may do in the future, but as concerns both what the existing Republican rule is and the existing Democrat rule, whether or not approved by the Justice Department? That's my first question. Second question to the Majority Leader is, in fact, does not this form of ballot give a very significant advantage to incumbents, and do not we have a significant conflict of interest if, in fact, that's the main benefit to come out of this, is to make certain that incumbents get reelected? And third, I would caution all members to please not address the body by indicating that this is the only solution and the only one that will work. In fact, there are other amendments pending which do provide for alternative solutions accomplishing exactly the same thing.
Now, we are under call. The House entities. Burke, you want to go out? Oh, okay, go ahead. Before the at ease, we had amendment number one before us and under debate. Is there any further debate upon amendment number one? Representative Cabino.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd sort of like to get a few more people here.
Representative Cabina, I'm pushing on this little bell here. Maybe if I do it enough, it'll irritate other people to force the other representatives in here. We have Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the House State Affairs Committee introduced a bill over a year ago because there were party rule changes and was going to affect how our primary worked. We have had extensive hearings around the state, in Anchorage, Fairbanks, many, many hearings here in Juneau on this issue. And we've looked at a number of options that we could use. This actual amendment came up one day in the House State Affairs Committee. It was a very intriguing discussion. I must admit that at the beginning, I had a lot of sympathy towards this type of approach. In fact, if I was looking at this purely as a party person, I thought it might be a good amendment, because in the last two gubernatorial elections, we would have had two Democrats running for governor. We would not have this governor. We would not have any of the smaller candidates, smaller party candidates, being involved in the debate after the primary election, because 99 times out of 100, they would not have been the top two candidates. In fact, the last two times we would have been
running with McAlpine and Knowles, I believe, and the time before that, we would have had Sheffield and Cooper. So if you think of it as a purely a partisan way, this would have been good for the Democrats as far as the gubernatorial race. But, Mr. Speaker, in analyzing this and getting discussions from a number of people and talking about it, that I have come to a conclusion that this is not the best alternative to take. This radically changes our way we would be conducting our primary elections. In essence, it does away with the party system in the state of Alaska. Now, granted, you could have your name, Republican or Democrat or Green or Ape, on the ballot. But because you would not be choosing at that time in August a party, a person to represent your party would only be choosing the top two people, it really would do away with it. I don't have the figures in front of me, but I believe we have quite a few less people voting in the primary elections than we do in the November elections, because so many people are working in the fishing industry, tourism, before the school districts go back. So there's a lot of people that wouldn't, that do not participate in that process. Speaker, this system is taken from one of the most corrupt systems in America for choosing candidates. How would we like to say we have gone the path of Louisiana? I mean, I don't want to have a choice of voting for a David Duke or somebody else that was thrown out of office, in essence, and that's our choices. I believe the party system allows us the opportunity to pick a candidate for our party and then go forward in that party system. We would now have four candidates, because we have four major parties, and we could also have then independent candidates. Some people would say, well, look, at this has the ability to win the election in the primary and not have to run again. I tell you, there's a lot of us that is an advantage to. I would not have had to have my second election. But I believe it cheats the people of our state out of really picking the best candidates and winding it down and having that debate when everybody in the state is involved. Also, Mr. Speaker, this system is a radical departure. We have had so many discussions on this, including in our committee, that the original bill as before us is supported by the Division of Elections, by the Lieutenant Governor, by the governor. And I believe by at least most of the parties. Now, there may be some disagreement on the Republican Party of exactly how they would like the law structured, and I don't have an answer for them. Also, Mr. Speaker, I'm trying to think because I'm missing some points here that I certainly want to make, because this is a very important bill on how we go forward, and I should have made some better notes. Mr. Speaker, the original bill, the before us, and I have to compare, and I hope that's acceptable, but the original bill before us changes our law as least as possible. It merely allows for a party to have their constitutional right of choosing who they want in their primary. This bill is so radical, it in essence does away with a primary system. Completely different than what we have done ever in the past. Speaker, I'm going to sit down because there's some other things that skipped my mind that I really should be saying to you, and I'll listen for a while, but I hope that we do not take this radical approach, which, by the way, I believe would probably end us up in court again, and that's what our original bill is trying not to do, is keep us out of court.
Representative Mike Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe if I just go back and give you a little background what this bill would do. I did research the last few primaries elections going back to 1982, and the prior speaker is correct. The last two gubernatorial elections, there would have been two Democrats running against each other. But in 82, it would have been two Republicans running against each other for governor. Why is that? Maybe because it's those are the candidates that generated the interest among the public out there. Maybe those are the candidates that the people wanted to have a choice between. They gathered the most votes in the primary. Under the system now, we could have five candidates out there, which are the five top vote getters, and another candidate out there, which is the 10th top vote getter, but yet he will appear on the ballot because he was number one in his party. I don't necessarily think that's fair either. How did it work in the congressional? Well, if you go back to 1982, in every race in the congressional level since 1982, the incumbent would have won in the first go-around. Just that simple. How does it affect legislative races in the state of Alaska, state house races, state senate races? Just looking at the last go-around, we had 10 races out there. Eight of them would have been decided in the primary, and then you would have had one race between two Ds and one race between an R and a D in the runoff. How would it affect the state house? Well, 30 of them would have been won in the first go-around. Then you would have had two races out there between two Ds, four races between an R and a D, and four races between two Rs. It cuts both ways. I think this has a beneficiary effect in as much as that I think you will see an increased amount of campaign spending in the first go-around, but you'll see a substantial decrease in campaign spending in this state in the second go-around, and I think the overall effect, you will see a substantial decrease in campaign spending in this state. And everybody's complaining that campaign spending in this state is too much. There's too much public or special interest going on in our campaigns. The way to cut that down is to cut the ability or to cut the amount that it takes to campaign for public office in the state of Alaska. We've heard the example of Duke Edwards' case. I hate to shatter anyone's bubble here, but one with an R, one with a D. Any other state in the union, you would have had that same choice. Just the way it was. The question here is that this new primary system, or this new system here, the amendment number one is a big step away. Yes, it is. But as drafted in 327, that also is a big step away from the system that we have. And in fact, I believe that the system addressed in Amendment 1 is closer to the system that we have today than the system that we have drafted in 327. There was a complaint about the August turnout. That's where we should be working to increase turnout. If it now becomes the general election, I think that there will be more turnout. There was a complaint because school districts employees are away. Well, you know, this is the state of residence. They should be voting in this state. If they're going to be gone, they should be getting an absentee ballot and voting in this state. I don't think that's an excuse to not be voting in this state. I think that this has a lot of positive things, Amendment number one. I think it will do some things that we want to see happening. It will, I believe, help decrease the cost of campaigning in this state, which will in turn decrease the amount of interest that special interest groups have in these elections. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Zawacki.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe a couple things that I would like to respond to. In the Louisiana election, there was not one Democrat and only one Republican in Duke. There actually happened to be two Republicans in that election. And it's unfortunate that our Alaska senator went down and campaigned for that Democrat, trying to tote himself as a dedicated Republican in this state. And his excuse was that Democrat was a key chairman position and would enhance the opening of ANWR. Well, we're all seeing how much clout that really had. Also, Mr. Speaker, people talk about the primary and the numbers that we have in the primary versus the general. We know we still have the highest percentage of people voting in the primary, But I also believe there's some factors why the primary is a little lower than a general. Alaska is unique in its size and it's to Alaskans. Many parts of this state, Alaskans are out commercial fishing, hunting, and many other things that do take them away from voting in that primary. Yet those same people know that they will have the opportunity to vote in the general, and they do come out in many parts of the state. I do not want to stand here and say just because they didn't take the time to get an absentee ballot, they aren't exercising their rights. I think those people, because of their specific circumstances, do take the effort to vote in the general, but because of the circumstances, are not voting in the primary. I think if this amendment passes, you will be depriving a large segment of Alaskans from being able to exercise what they truly would like to do in the general by putting this type of system together.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find this a very tough subject to deal with. I'm rising to join the speaker before me in opposing this amendment. I had a question for the sponsor of the amendment. I understand from this that all candidates, including independent candidates, I guess, would have to file by June 1st. And if the answer to that is yes, and the minor candidates have to file by June 1st, I thought we had a ruling in the Sykes case that the filing deadline had to be related to the amount of time necessary to publish the ballots and couldn't be artificially early. Party candidates relating to the general election.
Representative Parnell, you were seeking the floor.
I am, Mr. Speaker, and on the previous speaker's point, before I mention mine, I, along that same line, have a question of the maker of the amendment on the requirement. If somebody from a party does not happen to file and that party is vacant, there is provision for the party to nominate a little later on in the month. I'd be interested in knowing if this amendment addresses that point. And I have a pending amendment to the amendment, Mr. Speaker, with the clerk, that I would appreciate being prepared. And it goes to amendment number 1, page 3, down at the bottom of section 7. It says the director shall note an official endorsement of a candidate by a political party under Alaska Statute 1525057 immediately after the candidate's name. My amendment would strike that. I don't believe the state should be in the business of doing the promotion of a political party by implying that that party has endorsed that particular candidate. And so
well,
that would be the prerogative of the party to get
Speaker.
That information
Representative
out.
Taylor, there is a point of order here,
yes.
Representative Parnell, that
this
body does not have that amendment, but I assume that you're doing general discussion of the bill that sits before us until your amendment is prepared.
Mr. Speaker, I do stand corrected, and what I would appreciate is the continuation of the discussion until the amendment is prepared at proper time. Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on my point of order, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for presuming what I was going to raise, but on an additional point of order, we've now been debating for a considerable period of time. We have two members off the floor, away from the call, maybe just go to the bathroom or whatever, but they're missing that debate unless they're sitting by out there someplace, and I think it's only appropriate and courteous to the body that they be here and participate with us. For that reason, I'll ask an at ease until they return.
Representative Taylor, you're correct, but the call of the House means that you cannot conduct any business unless the call is, and that doesn't include discussions or debates, because there are times when people do have to leave this floor.
No, I understand.
You can't require people to be here to listen to other people talk, but you can require them here to vote on any motion or anything.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just ask for an at ease until they return.
Okay. There are objections to that, and I believe that the person that is absent has now arrived. Representative Sharp?
I ask for an at ease.
With the House entities. We had amendment number 1 before us, plus some explanations as to the call of the House. Okay. Any, once again, explanations on the call of the House? When there is a call on the House, members may, with permission, be out, but this body, of course, cannot perform any action like voting on a measure or any type of votes. If the Representative Cabina on amendment number one.
Mr. Speaker, just a 30-second at ease.
Or the House at ease. At ease, we have amendment number one before us and under debate. Is there any further debate upon amendment number one? Representative Taylor?
Well, I thought there was a handout here, and I thought the former speaker just before the break had indicated he was offering an amendment to amendment number one, and in fact, that's how it's designated.
Yeah, that amendment will not be offered at this time. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just simply to wrap up and answer some of the questions that have been asked. The Minority Leader said that there are some other solutions. I'm not aware of any other solution that will keep the ballot open. I think this is the only way we can keep the ballot open in this state. As far as I know, the Democratic Party changed its rule about a week or 10 days ago, and I'm not aware of any changes that are not included in here. The questions that were raised by the Chair of the State Affairs Committee is concerning the number of votes in the primary in August. We have a very high percentage of people who vote in August, and I believe that this will increase the number of people who will vote in August. The main comment that he made was that the original bill changes the primary as little as possible. That's just not the case. If the members would look at the handout really, the final page on that speaks for itself. Look at the ballot. The only way to keep the ballot the way it has been in the past is with this amendment. That's one ballot, all candidates, all people getting it. The other alternative is there are two separate ballots, and nobody, I repeat, nobody in this state will be able to vote an open ballot. They'll have to choose one or the other. Now that, from the voter's point of view, is a radical change. The question that was raised by the chairman from Labor and Commerce, what about the Sykes case and the provision for filing by petition? The provisions to allow filing by petition are repealed in this bill. Everybody will sign up and file on the June 1st deadline. Anybody else can run as a write-in. And any party could endorse such a person, including a write-in. There is no prohibition on that at all, and we don't get into the problems of the Sykes case at all. Thank you very much.
Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to bring out one other point that I neglected to do so before. I believe this bill also, as it's written, brings up some constitutional questions to its legality, especially in the way that it would deal with the governor and the election of the governor. Our Constitution says that the governor was chosen by the voters in a general election. Well, in essence, this bill does away with primary. It calls what we now have a primary, a general election. It calls then the next election a runoff general election. And since the 50% rule is in here, I'm assuming that the 50% vote would not count for the governor. The governor, I don't care if they received 90% of the vote the first time, they would still have to go on into another part. And it also raises constitutional questions about how a lieutenant governor candidate would get on there. Right now, you pick the top Democrat and the top Republican, the top Green, et cetera, and their person that is with them, the top lieutenant governor candidate would go with them. Well, in the last election, if we had two Democratic candidates that went to the top, you would have to have two lieutenant governor candidates. And if you only had one, then I believe it's written in here, then there's this process for going through and picking who the
governor, gubernatorial candidate would go out and pick somebody. Again, I think that takes it out of the voters' hands also. And I believe with the lieutenant governor situation in the Constitution, this whole mechanism for picking them anyways is, in my mind, cumbersome and does not necessarily give the people the right to choose that person, certainly in the first instance, and I believe it complicates the issue more so, possibly unconstitutional.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, just simply to respond to the last point, the legal counsel has looked at this. It is constitutional. The provisions that the previous speaker mentioned are on page 4 of the bill. And section 10 deals with the people who are running for governor. The state constitution is very clear, and it requires that the voters be permitted to vote on the slate, the lieutenant governor and the governor, in November. And so that slate must appear on the November ballot. Even under Amendment Number 1, the 50% provision could not constitutionally apply to the governor and does not. Now, with respect to a situation which conceivably could occur where there are two governors from the same party and only one lieutenant governor, leaving a vacancy and an opportunity there to fill that vacancy, let's look at what happened last in 1990 when Senator Coghill changed parties. Senator Sturgalewski selected Mr. Campbell. And this is exactly the same thing we're talking about here. It was no problem then, and it is not a change from the current system.
Representative Taylor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't receive an answer to my question, and that was, what is the current Democrat Party rule? And how does it fit within this scheme? Because instead of talking about supposition on what may or may not happen or could not happen, I think it's much more relevant to talk about what has to happen today in light of rules that have been pre-cleared by the Justice Department, unless people are just throwing that out now, too. Now we don't have to have pre-clearance, I guess, because none of this has certainly been pre-cleared. And the statement that this is the only form that gets us back to what everybody wants in Alaska, which is exactly what we used to have with no changes, is absolutely inaccurate. Because my understanding, current rule, Democrat Party, says that no Democrat shall allow their name to appear upon a ballot for which there is restricted access. Now, if that is the current rule, then this obviously does not comport with that, because in fact the ballot on the right hand side has Democrats and Republicans on it, and according to that rule the Republican is currently, quote, restricted, in that Republicans and independents only can have that ballot or vote upon that person. Therefore, this cannot be an accurate presentation to this group under the current rule. That's why I asked the question. I wasn't asking it to be dilatory. I want to know myself before I vote on this what impact it's going to have. I think it has a different impact from that which the sponsors have indicated. I have no question about the statement that I made earlier and asked if, in fact, it did not give significant advantage to any incumbent running. Of course it does. The period of time within which to run is significantly shortened. It runs from June 1 to August 25th this year. That's a major, major change. Is that a benefit to incumbents? I will guarantee you it is a benefit to incumbents. And what does it do to your party system? Totally destroys it as we know it today, allowing for an open debate and a candid vote given by people in the ballot box. That's a system we've known for the entire history of the state. What the representative is suggesting we go back to, and I think it's interesting that no comment has really been made on that, he wants us to go back to smoke-filled rooms in conventions where a bunch of the good old boys sit around and figure out who the party is going to endorse for their candidate. All endorsements by parties will take place at their convention, not on the ballot. and then tout it as if this is something that opens up the freedom of the ballot box to the great Alaska voter who's all troubled by what's going on. I submit to you, Mr. Speaker, that there are people probably confused and troubled by what's going on, and I hope to be included within that group, because these rule changes are coming down so quickly without opportunity for interpretation. People are scrambling around trying to find out what in the world is the legal opinion on this current rule change that I believe just occurred last night, or I wouldn't have asked about it. And if, in fact, that's not the current rule change, then how does this apply to the rule change that occurred by the Democrat Party just 1 week ago? And if that isn't the one, because it hasn't been cleared by the Justice Department yet, how does it work with the Democrat rule change that occurred about, what, 6 months ago? The one that said Democrat party, anybody can participate in the Democrat primary as long as you haven't participated in anybody else's primary. That was the rule that we were working at as this was going through committee. I mean, each one of these rule changes, Mr. Speaker, and I don't mean to belabor it, but makes a very significant difference in the manner in which a ballot can be structured. And to present this in front of us today and say this is current, I think is inaccurate. I know it to be inaccurate as regards Republicans. Republicans could not appear on this ballot if Democrats have access to it, or Greens, or AIP. If the ballot on the far right-hand side is only accessible to Republicans and to independents and non-declared, if that's your statement, then that would be accurate for Republicans. But it would not be accurate for Democrats under their current rule. And in fact, the voting for a Republican, there's two interpretations, Mr. Speaker, of whether or not you, quote, participate in a primary by voting for a person who is a member of a slate of candidates. That would be a vertical interpretation of participation in that party's primary. Other people, I think our Attorney General, in fact, someone has rendered an opinion that participation in a primary is a horizontal thing, meaning that if you just take members running for Congress and you only vote for one of them, and there are four candidates, that you have not participated in another party's primary by voting, say if you're a Democrat, voting for Don Young, who would be running, let's assume, for House. By making that vote, you've not participated in the Republican primary. You have only participated to that, I guess, to that extent. In other words, it's a limited thing going horizontally, not a vertical thing. I believe it has to be vertical because I think slates of candidates are proposed by parties and they are done in a vertical fashion. And voting for any one of them is participation, as far as I'm concerned, in a primary. But isn't it apparent from just trying to determine whether we're going to talk vertical or horizontal, whether we're talking about denial of access to a ballot or structuring of a ballot as to who may appear upon the ballot? Because those are totally different rules also, that we need to have the current rule in front of us on behalf of both parties, and we need to have some statement in here if not the Lieutenant Governor's office, at least the Attorney General's office, on whether or not pre-clearance is required before a rule change can occur. And shouldn't we at least talk to the Justice Department about this thing before we vote on it and try to implement it? Because in fact, could this not be significantly discriminatory on a racial basis for certain members of the Alaska population that we know to be very actively involved in subsistence gathering at this period of time? Would they, in fact, be participating at a lower number or a higher number depending upon when the vote were taken? It could very well be discriminatory in that aspect that we haven't even thought about yet. With all those things in mind, I think it's far too complex of a subject for us to be addressing in this sort of a cursory fashion thrown at us at the last moment while this moving target of rule changes is still occurring out there. With those things in mind, I'd submit this thing should go back to committee, but I'm going to watch the board very closely on how the vote occurs, because I think it's essential that this matter be resolved in the House today, so that we don't waste our time on it. I think there's more important matters to come up.
Representative Pinkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a very, very confusing issue. It's especially confusing because I find myself being so convinced by the minority leader, which doesn't happen. The reason I rise again is that there's a major conflict out here that we're dealing with. The representative from North Pole brought out figures that show that clearly the beneficiaries of this amendment, if we were to pass it, are largely the people in this room. And since I'm an incumbent legislator and my chances of getting 50% are way larger than any opponent I might have, I'd like to, as is true with everyone in this room, I'd like to declare my conflict of interest and ask to be excused from this vote.
Hearing objections, all members probably should ask to be excused, but that will be denied. Representative Parnell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the previous request for an amendment, it was suggested that I hold that until after this were either approved or rejected. And I've chosen to do that, but with the language that I addressed still in it, I won't be able to support it the way it is. Thank you.
Representative Hudson, you've been speaking for.
Well, just to the statement that this would absolutely favor incumbents, if you couple this with the ethics bill, which I know we're not supposed to combine, but it clearly states that none of us can campaign or raise any funds during the legislative session. That would not apply to a non-incumbent. So if you increase the time period or bring the time period for what will become a major commitment on the part of the voters to an earlier to the end of the session, why, I'm not so sure that it would necessarily improve it. But my primary consideration for this amendment is depicted by the ballot itself, and the deep concern that I have that a nonpartisan voter be able to go into the ballot box and be able to see, regardless of party, all of the candidates on one ballot, and then choose across the board there. Now, any way we can restrict party candidates is certainly fine, because that's what parties are all about. But for the nonpartisan candidate or voter, it seems to me like this particular amendment gets them the opportunity to be selective in that primary process. And there's a lot of questions that have been risen since we've been debating here, but that's been my major interest in supporting this amendment.
Representative Cabino.
Just to answer the minority leader's statement that the Democratic Party did change their rule. It was last week, and the rule was changed so that it said that their party's candidates cannot appear on a ballot that is restricted from anyone to vote. And the confusion there, the Lieutenant Governor put a May 1st deadline on that he wanted any rule changes at that point, and the date yesterday was that they submitted that change to the Justice Department, so yes, they do still have to be pre-cleared. So since that is not yet pre-cleared, you could technically say they do not have a rule officially on the books at this time.
Representative Baker?
Mr. Baker, just to the Chairman of State Affairs, and do I understand correctly then the Democrats have now closed their primary as well, so that the Republicans could not access their ballot?
Representative Cabino?
That is incorrect, Mr. Speaker. The Democratic candidate, as the original bill would say, would be on a ballot that any single person in the state could take that ballot. The only thing their rule said is they could not go on, and I'll use the Republican primary as an example, a Republican ballot, because that ballot would be restricted. A Democrat could not go and take that ballot and vote for it because of the Republican rule. So their ballot, their names would be on any ballot that is not restricted. Senate, is that clear? So in essence, we're is totally open.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amended party rule, which was adopted April 29, reads as follows. It's Rule 17.1. Alaska Democratic Party candidates may have their names appear on any ballot created by statute or regulation by the state of Alaska unless access to voting that ballot is restricted by party affiliation. Democratic candidates' names cannot appear on any ballot which restricts access to voting that ballot by party affiliation. To answer the two core allegations that were just raised for the first time by the minority leader. Number one, that these party rules would be irrelevant under our amendment if the amendment passes, because it would be an open primary, no longer controlled by the parties, no longer subject to tashes. And so the ballot that we have prepared that has been referenced by the chair of oil and gas on the right of the handout would in fact be accurate. The other question that the representative from Wrangell mentioned was the preclearance question. And of course this hasn't been precleared because it is not yet state law. It will have to be submitted to the Department of Justice, but because it's an open ballot, very similar to what we have now, I believe it would be pre-cleared, but that's simply supposition. One never knows. The point is that whatever is done will have to be pre-cleared because we've got rules that are under submission now. The Republican Party has just reaffirmed its position. We have a new statute. The statute, the bill itself, will have to go to justice for pre-clearance. Whatever we do will have to be pre-cleared.
Representative Cabina.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, but there's some misstatements in the Right Honorable Majority Leader's comments. Number one, this law, the original bill, as before us, will not have to go to Justice Department to be cleared. Number two, there will not be a primary vote any longer if this amendment passes. And the Minority Leader is absolutely correct in saying how individual parties will nominate their people and endorse them on a ballot. It will not be by a primary system conducted by the state of Alaska.
Representative Ivan.
Can I ask a brief eddies, please?
The House Dennis. These, we had amendment number one before us under extensive debate. The intentions of the chair is to try to go as far as we can with this bill and then take a break for lunch, a half-hour break, and come back onto the floor and finish our business. The call has not been satisfied. While we're waiting for the call, once again, it is the intention of the chair when we are finally done with our calendar. Maybe because the calendar is so long, we might have the Senate bill transmitted over to us at that time, but we'll keep it open for receiving of that of the budget bill. Okay, to debate amendment number one, Representative Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since the call hasn't been satisfied yet, I'll take a moment here to just bring people up to date. During the break, I was reminded of the fact that as of the moment that we're standing here now, as far as my information is, the Democrat Party rule that had been submitted to Justice and approved by the Justice Department pursuant to the Voting Rights Act has been officially withdrawn by the party. That a new rule, as indicated by both the chairman of State Affairs and the Majority Leader, that a new rule has been implemented within the party. It has been now apparently submitted to the Justice Department, but has not been approved. Even if it were approved, it has to do with the structuring of a ballot and does not have anything to do with access. The tension case has to do with access. So as a consequence, the question of accessibility is not affected by that rule, merely the structuring of the ballot itself. So as a consequence, there is no Democrat Party rule that exists at this point. There is a Republican rule that has been approved by, or pre-cleared is a better term, by Justice. As concerns the other parties, I'm not knowledgeable enough about the Greens and the Independent Party to even make a comment on that, but I thought the membership here should be at least aware that today there is no rule, basically, on the one side that has been approved and that must be implemented by the lieutenant governor, primarily because the current rule is not a passing rule. Does not deal with the party. It merely deals with how a ballot can be constructed. So as a consequence, there is only one rule. And if, in fact, parties are curious, if you look at the back of amendment number 3, you'll see, in fact, how that ballot has to be constructed. So.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Put the clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Ulmer? From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
15 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Would the clerk make reference to the next amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Representative Groomberg, M.W. Miller, Copenhagen, and Hudson. Yes.
Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number 2.
Hearing objection?
This amendment is the same as amendment number 1 without the 50% provision. So for all offices, regardless of whether it's governor or not, the top 2 vote getters would go on to the general election. Other than that, it's identical.
Representative Cabina.
Speaker, I would only say that all the arguments for amendment 1 number 1 except for that issue still apply.
Any further debate? Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I believe that issue is the important one because it does assure us that we will have a contest in the fall general election, and it will assure us that whoever survives that has the support of the majority of voters. And I continue to believe that in a democracy, the majority, with due regard for the rights of the minority, is the deciding group. That the majority of voters should be the ones who pick the representatives or the any of public official in any district. I feel that the dangers of minority government have been illustrated sufficiently in the past. The problem so often is that a lack of understanding, a lack of broad support has led to confusion in government, has led to undemocratic actions, has led to inability actually to carry out a mandate. And if you have a majority vote, you have a mandate. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board? Representative Navarre? From yes to no. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Ulmer? From yes to no. Madam Clerk, would you tally the board?
15 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Would the clerk make reference to amendment number 3?
Amendment number 3 by Representative Taylor.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number 3 and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection?
There being objection, rather than go through a detailed explanation of exactly how this thing works, let me just turn you instead to the ballots that we prepared as samples. In fact, the way the bill currently reads, this sample attached on the back is not quite correct. What it should say is where it says ballot number 1, if you'd all please write in the word closed in capital letters. Then on the other side where it says ballot number 2, write in the word open in capital letters, because that's the way the pending legislation before you intends that this should read. Why they didn't put in on ballot number one, evil, awful, icky, poo, I don't know. And then on ballot number two, super good, neat, and open, and wonderful. You know? Because that's about what it amounts to when we...
Representative Calvino.
Well, I think there's a point of order here. Maybe you can figure out exactly what it is, but...
Poo is mighty strong for these, this floor. But keep on, Representative Taylor, you're full of it.
Second page. I tell you, I have a hard time keeping up here. I really do. If you turn to the second page, the ballots that are indicated there is what would result if he passed this amendment. And I think if the words of the majority leader could be used again, this is the most open, classic primary, getting as close as you possibly can to what we had in previous years, and currently would comport with all of the known rules as approved by justice. It would not comport with the recent Democrat rule change to the extent that they would probably not be allowed by their own party rule to appear upon ballot number one, as access to that would be restricted. So as a consequence, if that rule is approved by justice and implemented by the lieutenant governor, neither of which I believe can occur, because we are past his implementation date, which was May 1, and he was only willing, in the letter he wrote to the parties, to implement those rules that had justice preclearance. So as a consequence, I don't think he can, in light of that letter to each of the parties, now amend or change or continue to have this floating target out there of let's all change our rules and dance to see who dances. It's a lot like music, been a lot like musical chairs. As long as the music is playing, we've all got a place to sit down, and when the music stops, somebody doesn't. So I think that's what occurred here. And unfortunately, I don't think that applies, and if you pass this amendment and we do not have that party rule of regarding closure on the part of the Democrat Party in place or approved, this would be the ballot that would come out. And that may be offensive to some parties, but believe me, it's probably no less offensive than myself finding today a proposition on this floor labeling one ballot open and another ballot closed. I think that's inappropriate. We ought to remove that, if nothing else. And I can submit that as an amendment if this one fails. But this one would delete that aspect also. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that this amendment is the grossest manipulation of the primary ballot process that I can possibly think of. The Republican Party wants a closed primary. Let's give them a closed primary. That's what the bill in its current form does. It gives them a closed primary. It allows them to choose their candidate. And it leaves everything else open. Anybody who wants to vote for other than just a Republican picks the other ballot. Mr. Speaker, I think that the Alaskans want an open primary. I think that the Democratic Party has strived to make their rules accommodate that open primary for the people of Alaska, and I think that the bill as written accomplishes that. This amendment simply tries to manipulate the process in order to, I better withhold the reason.
Representative Ellis, and then we'll get...
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the minority leader was incorrect in one point he made in his remarks about the letter from the lieutenant governor to the parties. I remember reading that letter, or reading a copy of that letter, and it led me to believe that the parties had until the end of last month to make a rule change with which a deadline with which the Democratic Party complied in the estimation of the attorney or the lieutenant governor, meet the requirement for preclearance, give a reasonable amount of time to justice to preclear a new rule. So the Democrats did withdraw the old rule that they thought would keep the Republicans from moving forward with a closed primary and substituted a new rule under that deadline. set by the Lieutenant Governor. He set that deadline to give Justice the time to pre-clear a new rule if the party so chose to submit one, and for him to get in line with those rules in his conduct of the upcoming primary election. So I believe that that the Democratic Party got in under that wire.
If I couldn't respond.
Representative Taylor.
Just in response, I don't think that the Rules Chair and I would disagree too strongly about the letter. In fact, we could probably get a copy of it and have it distributed if, in fact, people are concerned. My only intent by the comments I made was to indicate that implementation of a new rule change, if in fact justice takes any more than another few days to do it, becomes very, very difficult in light of the statutory requirements faced by the Lieutenant Governor's Office Division of Elections to get out a primary ballot and have it printed within a sufficient period of time. So I think all of those things bode against getting the type of approval that he had asked for in the letter. And he did mention the term pre-clearance and implementation, so I hope I wasn't misleading anyone by my indication.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. I'm tempted to vote for this amendment. I'm not sure whether I will or not, but it does open up some very interesting possibilities. As the minority leader points out, the majority of Alaskan voters are nonpartisan, non-affiliated, independent and undependable. They're the most volatile section of our electorate. I mean, not that we here are not volatile in our affiliations or our opinions from time to time, but they're even more so. I remember getting public opinion messages asking that the non-affiliated voter should be given two ballots, at least two votes, so that they can choose candidates in both parties. Well, that was a rather quaint interpretation of open ballot law, but fortunately I don't see an amendment to that effect. But it does open up the possibility where we can see, appearing on the Republican ballot, a Green candidate who is also the Green candidate's official party, AIP, and any number of Democrats officially endorse. I'm not sure that the party officials in the Republican Party necessarily would love that particular kind of opening, because if you have a Republican contest, two or three Republicans filing for position and only one AIP or only one Green or only one Democrat appearing on that ballot, the results I can imagine would be rather interesting and lead to a certain degree of confusion on the floor here in the organization of the body. Thank you.
Representative Cabino.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only thing this amendment would do would send the state of Alaska to court and put our primary election under the hands of an appointed master. Number one, the three parties other than Republican parties all have rules, each one of them, that say they cannot be on a ballot, that their members cannot vote for. Now, the wording for that may be different for each of them, but the effect of it is that the Democrats, Greens, and the Alaska Independents have said they will not be on a ballot that their members cannot vote for. The Republicans have restricted who could vote for their candidates, so therefore none of these parties could be on this ballot. And it would be interesting, I should leave it at that, but it would be interesting to say if are these ballots, then would they be counted together? In other words, would the Democrat people that got votes on Democratic ballot number one be added to the Democrats in ballot number two? Actually, the Division of Elections people that run our elections say this system is probably impossible to conduct and count on the existing system that we have. Mr. Speaker, this will not do anything but totally destroy our election process this year in the first primary.
Representative Kopanen.
I just want to remark that to a certain extent this is the New York state system, which is not completely this, but any candidate can run on any number of party labels, and very typically the candidates for office, like Senator DeMaho is, for instance, a conservative and a Republican. The other senator is a Republican, a Democrat and a liberal. In other words, in the final election, the votes are total, but in the primaries, they are not. Whoever wins the party primary carries that nomination. In some cases, it's two or three parties. Thank you.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe it's very clear here. If the current bill would not allow over 55% of the registered voters in Alaska that are non-affiliated with the party to be able to choose which candidate they want to vote for in the primary. That's the crux of the whole situation. It's not talking about the 20% here, the 20% there, or less that are registered party members. Without this amendment, this bill will disenfranchise the choice of those 55 or 58% of non-affiliated party voters to be able to choose which person they want to vote for in the primary. That's what the current bill does without being amended. And that, I believe, is what the amendment will correct and allow the majority of the voters in the state of Alaska the choice to vote for whomever they want to in the primary, and the party registered people, which are in the minority, will be controlled by this option here.
Representative Cabino?
Mr. Speaker, that just statement is not correct. Number one, I'll say it again, you cannot, by party rules, put other parties on a restricted ballot. They will not like it. Number two, what we have here in reality, this body, this whole legislature passed 55-5, a resolution saying we wanted an open primary. What we have is a situation where, and I have tried through this whole process not to be political, not to jab at the Republicans. But the simple fact of the matter, the Republicans have passed a rule that restricts access to their ballot. And now, I believe they see this as a problem. And I think the 55-5 vote demonstrates that. And they're coming up with some kind of cockamamie solutions here that do not work and are not legal.